Hello, hello everyone out there, and welcome back to another riveting episode of the Final Cast on the Paddle and Fin Network with your hosts Matt
and Brad. Cheerio.
Cheers. What's a cheerio?
Yeah.
Lord, there's a reason we don't talk like that, and it's called 1776.
Yeah, buddy.
Yep, they tried and they failed. But what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not a lot. Got the P127 out. It was awesome. So,
told you you'd love it.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. I got it out twice last weekend, so it was fun.
Yeah, and you took it on the river both times, right?
Yep, I took it out to deep stretches on the river, so I wasn't banging it on the rocks and stuff. But you've done it, so.
I did it all last season. It's still fine. And I think, don't quote me, but I think it was half a foot of water I was just still pedaling through at one point.
Yeah, so. I think it was like 1.1 foot of water. I can't remember exactly.
It was between, I thought it was a foot and a half. I think I just said half.
I remember you asking me that question.
Yeah, I just said half a foot, not half a foot. It was, I think it was a foot and a half. But yeah, I think it was closer to a foot because we were super shallow and I was still pedaling. And I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you'll like it. I haven't got the RVR out yet, but I've got it all.
You could have Sunday, but...
I know. Well, no, I couldn't have Sunday because I had to watch my dog. And then I had to go do some family stuff. And then I got a buddy who's welding up the trailer so we can put a second tier on it for another kayak and then my rod box. Cool. Yeah, so we're going to be welding that all up. Which I didn't know how inexpensive metal is. I really thought it'd be like a couple hundred bucks, like 300 or more for as much HSS we needed. But
would you get like square tubing?
No, we haven't got it yet because I think I can get it cheaper through somebody who goes through our shop. But it's like 25 feet of HSS was like 150 bucks. Really not that bad stainless. So.
After you're done with that, we need to do a show on trailer modifications and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So that'd be cool. That'd be a good show.
Yeah, we'll do that. But yeah, man, other than that, just getting ready for Dale Hollow, getting ready for the season to kick off. Hopefully I'm going to try to go out Thursday afternoon cause it's going to be like 71. It'll be windy, but I'm going to try to go out anyway.
So. Nice.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Speaking of Dale Hollow, guys, do not forget we got our Dale Hollow meetup April 23rd, 22nd, 23rd. So,
meetup tournament.
Yeah, meetup tournament. Enter the tournament. So, yeah, me and Matt keep forgetting to say that. So, your official announcement. And also, this segment sponsored by Dark Horse Tackle and Nico Bates. So, check them out.
We're hitting every box tonight. That's like a first. We actually hit everything,
dude. I gotta remember to do that stuff more often. Which I mean, it's not a big deal because we got like their logos and stuff here, and we put them in the show notes and tag them.
And they're both cool. So it's like they're not really butthurt about it or anything. But we should do it anyway because they both go out of their way to sponsor the show, and they're both great companies. So yeah, definitely give them a check. But this week we have a guest on the show that we found through one of our sponsors, Dark Horse Tackle.
Heck yeah.
So we've talked about him before on the show. We just talked about him last week when we were doing our Dark Horse boxes. But we have a Mr. Jesse French from Blue Rock Custom Tackle Baits.
What's up, Jesse? Guys?
What's going on?
Not much, man. Just chilly evening down here on the river. Just excited to join you guys here and chit chat a little bit.
Heck yeah. What river are you on?
We're on the Muskingum. Just a little river that if you've ever traveled down like I-70 through Zanesville, Ohio, the Muskingum runs right. You drive right over it and it runs clear down through McConnellsville into Washington County and dumps in the Ohio right in Marietta.
Oh, I always thought you were from Kentucky. I don't know why I thought that.
I don't know. I had some guys at the Columbus Fishing Expo that almost argued with me that I was from Cincinnati. Maybe it's just my hillbilly twang. I don't have any idea, but it's hard to tell. As long as they love me, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesse, we've been using the base for a while, but we got a chance to meet you and talk to you at the Columbus Expo. How did the rest of that expo go for you?
It was a great show. That's kind of what we consider our home show. So, a lot of friends and, you know, family from down here locally, we're probably about an hour and 20 minutes off. They come up and just the outpouring of support we've had here in Ohio.
Oh, we lost you. He did something to the camera.
It happens. Technology sucks 90% of the time. But until he comes back on in here, me and Brad were at the Cincinnati Expo. We walked around a little bit. We're working the Loveland booth. And the expo's over at this point. All the guests are gone. People are packing up. And we're carrying kayaks around. And we turn around. And Blue Rock was right there. And I was like, didn't see him the whole show. And I was like, dude, I really wanted to like go to that booth and talk to them. So when we saw him at the Columbus Expo, we were looking at something else and saw him. We're like, yep, stopping. We got to stop. We got to talk to the guy. We got to get him on the show. So,
yeah, that was funny. Like, we were carrying our kayaks out towards the back of the door. And I, out of the corner of my eye, I saw their banner. I was like, I didn't even know they were here. That's crazy.
Yeah, Jesse, we lost you, which I'm sure you were aware
of.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I had another app that was open, and it was like a chat thread that started dinging. It was bugging me. I had to get it muted real quick. I forgot to turn it off. So totally my bad.
Oh, you're good. No, we were just talking about how we were at the Cincinnati show, and me and Brad looked around, and we went to all the other rooms, but we didn't really go like that last row where you guys were at next to the fish tank.
Gotcha.
And when we started tearing everything down, we saw you packing up your trailer, and I was like, dude, I wanted to go talk to them. Like, yeah. I didn't know they were here. So when we saw you at the Columbus show, it like was an immediate, went right over there. And Jesse wasn't even there when we went there the first time. He was off delivering baits.
Yeah, I actually walked by you guys. I was actually just taking a buddy a fish finder bracket that I randomly brought to the show and was gone for like 20 seconds, and it was when you guys came. My wife told me, but either way, we got it all here we are.
Oh yeah, we had to make sure to come back by. So Brad, start us off,
man. All right, you want to start off by letting the people know who you are and like how you got this whole business started?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Pretty simple, straightforward. I worked at a water department for a few years, and before I've kind of been doing this. I actually worked for ODOT, but I started making tackle a while back, years and years ago, and it just kind of turned into like a hobby and to whatever. And then I ran across a buddy at some point on like Facebook Marketplace, maybe a customer that offered to build me a website, and then it kind of kept snowballing from there and just kind of kept being creative and trying to make quality stuff. And now we've been a business for probably, I'd say this would probably be going into our like sixth year as like a real business. It's about my third year, like really going hard at like spending a lot of hours at it, like aside from just like a side hustle. But the money still feels like a side hustle at times, just because small business is tough. But
yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, nothing real crazy, man. Just a lot of support from friends, and just getting out and fishing myself a lot, I think, has helped grow the business. So,
is this your full time gig?
Yeah, I have another LLC where I do some like contract driving for like a medical service. But probably like I mean, this time of year, it's pretty much solely tackle. That's kind of a good filler. Later in the year, things slow down, and if we get caught up on inventory, I'll do that a little bit more. But this spring, it really hasn't had time to. I mean, it's all tackle right now, for sure.
That's good. Cool success story.
Never a bad thing.
Yeah. That little driving gig was kind of a blessing to kind of keep a little bit of pressure off of me and just the family in general with having a couple little kids and just, you know, not milking the business dry while it was still, which it's still young, but it just seems like every time when you get legal and have to pay taxes and everything, every time you turn around, it's just, you're getting hit with something.
My wife owns her own business as well. And so I hear the ins and outs of it as well. So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's just small business. You gotta enjoy hustling and all that good stuff. So and grinding.
No, that's a cool, success story, because a lot of like custom tackle makers out there, they're not doing this full time. And like, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
even if they do. So what I've told a couple different people who have wanted to get into this industry, in my opinion, the fishing industry, especially tackle related, is the hardest industry.
It's hard. That's what I was trying to say.
And it's mostly because you have, you know, all your brands, like new cars come out all the time, right? From different, like Tesla just came out of nowhere with an electric vehicle. And then there's other cars who make around the world and they can get in and people buy their cars. With lures and stuff, you have the OGs who have been using the same Zoom fluke since 1942. They got back, or 1945, they got back from World War II and started throwing the Zoom fluke, and they never put it down, and they told everyone that's the only one they'll ever throw. And you have your new guys who watch a ton of YouTube and they go off of what the latest hipster angler is throwing. And then, you know, it's just hard to get into, especially if you're new, because you A, have to get out there to where people can see you. B, fishermen are some of the most critiquing mothers I've ever met, because I'm one of them. I've been that way, to where I'll get a bait and be like, this is poo, and I just won't use it. So you have to make a quality product, and you have to stay on top of it. Just because you get a little bit of traction at the beginning, if you don't stay on top of it, it'll immediately go away.
Right.
You know, and you'll know this better than most, but you're competing with guys who, with companies that have been doing this for years and years and years, decades, and breaking that industry and breaking that mold is not hard, not easy.
No, it's not. And, you know, you mentioned a couple things there that are very important. I think one big thing with, like, you mentioned all the guys that kind of do it part time, and, you know, which I still have a little security net there. But I found, like, you're not really going to like tackle is a volume business. You're not going to make, like, you know, money you can live on unless you're really doing volume of sales. It's like when you take that leap of like, all right, I'm going to try to live off this. It's, you know, it goes to like, rather than selling your buddy Jim, you know, four black and blues and making $10, it's like, well, I got to sell 4,000 of something now to, you know, make what I would have at my day job. Or so it kind of forces you to get creative. I think brand is a big deal. I think we kind of got lucky, and just, there's something about maybe our name or our logo, or maybe it is the products. I try to stay humble on that crap, but like, people just seem to have like attached to us and supported us. And I've had, you know, some well-respected anglers kind of get behind me, and all of that stuff just, you know, keeps piling up to, like, in the big scheme of things, our business is nothing, but it's starting to be a little something. So that's cool, I guess. And I think serious fishermen also want a dependable product that they know they can come back and get again. Like, if I'm at a trade show as a customer and I see like a good looking whatever, but the company just looks like, this guy just might be the only year he's ever doing this or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to buy products that if they work, I know I can come back and get them again. And I think that alone takes 2 or 3 years to just prove to people that you're not going anywhere and they can depend on you and your products.
Yeah. Hey, you hit on the volume thing too, which like the bigger companies out there, they deal with the same thing. I mean, they're in all these box stores and stuff like that, and they're trying to sell all these at volume because like you said, you can't make that money just selling a few here and there.
No. And you know, that's nothing against the guys that are, you know, I was that guy for years, just basically making enough to, you know, pay some tournament entries or pay for my hobby or pay for other tackle that I bought. And for some ignorant reason, I was like, man, I think I could do this. as I kept, you know, doing it and like, it kind of all just timed out to like the year COVID hit. And like, that was like a big sales booster for anybody in the industry. Unless you were like trying not to grow. So it all just kind of timed out. Like I literally, like I had a really good show at Columbus that year and was doing all right on the website. And I went and talked to my county manager at ODOT and like, 10 days later, all the like national COVID restriction hit. It was like a week or two after like Columbus show. And I'm like, I just put in my 2 weeks notice and I was like, oh my God, I just made the worst decision of my life. But it ended up like our sales doubled that year and like it was like a blessing, like it was supposed to happen. So it was cool the way it all worked out. The COVID wasn't cool, but it made me feel like there was a bigger reason for what I was doing, I guess, if you're a silver lining type of person.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think COVID with a lot of industries that you saw, like your mom and pop shops and then your restaurants and stuff really saw a big downturn because no one could go out and do anything. The outdoor industry and almost everything in it exploded. Right. Because almost every tackle store, big box or even smaller boxes are connected, at least in Ohio, are most of the time connected to a firearms department, which when all the restrictions were happening, firearms departments and fire stores that had firearms in them were allowed to stay open at full capacity because it was considered a necessity or a need to the people. So that's why you saw your tackle industry explode. So a lot of small mom pops. I know of two companies that were part-time and then they went full-time in COVID just because they were finally getting the sales consistently and, you know, people were just buying stuff out the yin. I know during COVID, I was just buying random stuff I'd never tried before because
in multitudes, it was just like a chain reaction of, and I don't want to say it was like a false year of sales because like things are definitely kind of stabilizing back out a little bit. But it just helped like businesses like me in so many different ways, just so that like the supply chain issues, like stores like Fisherman Central just couldn't get a lot of things. So I'm that next little middleman guy that, you know, I got in probably 15 stores that year because there was so many supply chain issues and they're like, eh, we'll try this dude's crap. We'll just put something on the shelf. And a few of them stuck. So, like Fisherman Central, we have a great relationship with them now. Dan's awesome. Zach, guy that orders. I mean, they order consistently and like, it was all due to that freaky weird crap that happened with the economy. Yeah. So,
I'm glad you brought that up because I had that as a talking point here, getting into stores. Cause a lot of small tackle businesses, they have hard time doing what you're doing. Like what's the process for that? Is it like tough to do?
You know, I think your loyals are a big, a big factor in it. I work hard on social media and stuff too, to to grow things and like create content. Like our YouTube channels, a lot of the videos are kind of cringy, but still at any rate, like it's me proving the concept. And like, it amazes me how many guys come up to me at shows and like, you know, they might tell me like, oh, I know where you were fishing in that video. And I'm like, well, I know I posted the video. Like,
yeah.
So it's working in some cool little way. Like, at any rate, they're watching the videos. I think that stuff helps us kind of slowly build your brand. Mm-hmm. But as far as the stores go, I think the biggest thing is this getting past that hurdle of being like a, under the table guy, because a lot of like legit stores just won't deal with you unless they know that you have an LLC, you're paying your excise taxes, and you're legit, because they don't want to get caught up in some problem that you've created for yourself, because if something happens there, they kind of all get drug into it too. So I think a big factor in getting into stores is just getting legal and, you know, paying the piper on all the extra taxes and everything. And you just got to see it as like, all right, well, I've just got to, you know, make more sales if I'm going to be a legal business. But that's the thing that I've heard from, you know, a handful of the stores is like, they get a custom jig guy in there, and then they called him back and he's like, oh, I can't make any this month. And like, that goes back to the dependable product deal too. So but stores, they just kind of, I've never really like been like a pushy sales guy. Most of the stores we're in either have come to me through a lead or like someone telling me, hey, give this guy a call, he's interested or whatever. But I like the pace they've came, because it's all grown at a good, you know, slow and steady, and I've been able to like keep the business in a healthy place, like debt wise and all that, and not have to get a bunch of, because growing too fast can be a major problem too. But I don't know.
We talked to somebody recently that said the same thing. I don't remember who it was.
I do, and I can't remember who it was either. Like, I remember it hasn't been that long ago.
I know.
But one thing I do want to say, because you just mentioned it, like you haven't really gone out after the stores. They've either come to you through a lead or it's word of mouth. Hey, this guy's interested. That speaks volumes for like who you are as a company and as a business owner. Because when your customers are actually going out, they're basically selling for you.
Right.
So when they're saying, hey, this business is, hey, you really should look at these baits, they're awesome, blah, 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 blah. I mean, that speaks volumes for pretty much who you are as a business and as an owner, because your customers are willing to, you know, talk about you and give you publicity.
It's super humbling, man. Like it, I almost get choked up because like, you know, the national sales rep, like at the Columbus Fishing Expo, come up to me and for cash and rods, and he said, "Hey, Garnet, man, I've seen 100 blue raw cats walking around this place. What are you doing here in Ohio?" And I was just like, "Man, I don't know. Like, it's just absolutely awesome. Like, it's so freaking it's just cool. I don't know what it is. Like, I went, you know, go back to earlier, if it's the brand." If it's actually like the baits or just me kind of being a down home boy and treating everybody with respect and not having a big ego and like things I don't believe in, you know, and maybe it's a little bit of all that like stuff together, but something's working a little bit. So
that's, I was going to say it's probably all of it.
Yeah, it's a big combination of everything of that, because I mean,
those hoodies you had were dope at the show.
They were like, I was I meant to go back the second time when we dropped the card off. I told Brad, I was like, yeah, when we come back and talk to him, I'm going to pick one of those up. And I'm pretty sure it's the one you're wearing right now, because the material's like kind of smooth and I don't know. I just liked it.
Yeah.
And then we started talking and we just kept talking and I completely forgot about it. And when we were tearing our boats out, because we got our kayaks at the show at the very end,
right,
we were putting them on my trailer and I looked at Brad, I was like, I didn't get that stupid hoodie, man. I'm so pissed off now.
Yeah, we might be able to help you guys out with that for having us on tonight. So we'll talk about that afterwards.
Cool.
So the first question I got, Brad, you already asked a question. Get out of here. So I want to start kind of, because you said, yeah, don't be sucking your teeth at me. Oh, he's gone. All right. I want to start kind of at the beginning, because you said you've been doing it for a little while and then you got the going full time. What was one of the first baits that you really started that you still sell now? So, I mean, back in the day, I was tying jigs, and I can tell you, I probably won't ever tie that jig again just because somebody asked me for a black and like red colored jig. But what is one of your staples that you started with, one of your first, and it's still going strong?
Well, I mean, just in general, like the first like tinker and mold I ever bought, I just bought a stand up shaky head mold and kind of just started hustling them around. We got a little crap hole lake down here called Dillon Lake. And it's just north of Zanesville, and it's kind of known to be a good little shaky head lake, and no one was really selling anything. So that kind of started the whole entrepreneurial spirit in me with it. But as it kind of went, you know, if you fast forwarded, you know, a couple years from that, I was probably in my mid-20s and you know, had probably 30 molds at that point, and a whole mad scientist room in the basement going on. Everybody does. And but then I hit a wall where I was like, got busy to the point where it was like, man, like there's like I'm missing something. And I never really knew about like faster ways to produce, because I'm just thinking like the whole time, like there's no way people make like legit income with these open closed molds. And then I ran across the guy that like told me about this whole spin cast process, which is like centrifugal force. And so I kind of invested in that stuff and started learning how to make some molds and really produce stuff quicker. Like if you just kind of fast forward through the evolution of whatever. And then I got into like creating like the triple threat jig. Our little finesse jig was like the first like all custom. Like I just made basically took a hook and some components and made a little clay design. It was when the Ned was becoming real popular. Mm-hmm. And, I was like, man, if I could tie a little skirt on this, and I still swear to this day, there's a lot of guys doing it now, but I was like, in my head, it was the only one I had seen at that point. And actually, when I was just using them and not even selling them, the young man that worked for me, named Kobe Thompson, he actually won the high school BASS state championship on alum on this little jig. And then I told his stepdad, a good friend of mine, Casey Coffey, I was like, Case, I got to start selling these, bud. So that was kind of the first little bait that, you know, it really like lit a fire under, like they were selling and they were buzzing a little bit. Doug Clifford did a write up in Ohio Outdoor News for me and talked about them, and just little things that happened over time to like just give me enough confidence to keep going with it. And you know, and then I started learning through that particular bait that custom designed lures just tend to sell a lot better than like a just I don't want to call do it molds generic, but something that anyone can so and that's one thing I've realized a lot with the 1099. Like you'll get there's a whole story behind that thing too, with Whitney and everybody that kind of helped me with that. But you get guys at the shows that come up and like look at one and are like, where'd you get that mold? And these guys make their own jigs and stuff, and I'm just like, oh, it's a custom mold we made ourselves. And when guys like that make their own jigs are buying your jigs, that's when you know like you're doing it right, because these guys will go at all costs to not give you a dime. But if it looks so good they can't stand it, that's when you know you gotta you got a good little product going. So yeah, spending the extra money and time to do the custom stuff is for sure a big helper, I feel.
The thing I like about your jigs and your spinner baits is that you use the wire to tie the skirt on, not like a rubber band or anything. That was the first thing that stuck out to me, man. I see that and I'm like, attention to detail. I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that just goes back to, like, you know, when I want to go fish a bait in a tournament, or because I was making all this stuff for myself before I was selling it. And it was just kind of the way I did it. And then I started using a copper, which a couple of years ago, you didn't see much of at all. Now I'm seeing some more guys using copper pretty close to home even, but that is what it is. That's business. You just got to keep evolving and doing all that good stuff. So
well, there's only so much you could do with a jig, so but it's kind of it's cool that you're using custom molds too, because like you said, there's guys out there that use do-it molds and they just throw it together and they sell them, which I don't like that as much as the custom.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, molds they're awesome. I'm just saying from like a sales standpoint, like guys like you or I that have been to shows and you walk around and you're like, seen that. But then you like see this one little thing and you're like, man, I've never seen that. And like, that's just, you know, you need that little bit of something different just to even start a conversation with a fella, or you know, he may not even buy something there, but he may go tell his buddy about it or go look at your website. But it all, you know, it all usually comes back around full circle.
Yep, agree with that.
Yeah, I'm about to say it was the same thing kind of what Brad said and what you said. If I walk around the show and I see, because there's a ton of custom guys who go there and they're not making necessarily bad jigs, but they're like, they're a do it mold that I either have owned or all these other guys who are just buying the same mold and doing them. It's not saying that's a bad jig, or it's not saying, you know, anything along those lines. But when I see that everywhere, I kind of don't ever stop to really look at them, because it's right, a dime a dozen right at that point. But when, yeah,
it's the hot chick in high school that you thought you could never get. I mean, you look through all the other girls at this one and you're like, I gotta have that. I mean, that's just, it's our nature.
Yep, there you go. That's the best analogy I could ever make, so good job.
That's funny. So scrolling through the website here, I noticed the screw lock tail spinner. That looks pretty unique and interesting.
Yeah, that's a weird little product. I caught on to that a couple of years ago at the BFL regional down on the Potomac. In my head, it seems like that's a bait that really, or a bait, I guess it'd be like a terminal product that it really triggers like a lot. It seems like tidal fisheries, that's a big deal in Florida, but the Potomac. I've had guys tell me like, it's not a tidal deal. You need to have one on the end of your Senko, you know, anytime you're fishing around grass or yada, yada, yada. I don't know. I've noticed they do make a difference in some situations, but others, they may not, like if they're just eating that good, but it's definitely something a little different. I don't really know, honestly, what the little critters are thinking down there.
Yeah. No, it's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
And sometimes something different or just unique is all you need. So you can go out there and there'd be, you know, they're not wanting to bite anything. And then you throw something like that on and out of nowhere, you're starting to get bit. It's just something they haven't seen, especially in pressured fisheries. Man, the unique stuff. I got stuff in my box that, you'd look at me like, why are you throwing that? That looks like it's stupid. But I'll throw it if I ever just can't get a bite. And guess what happens? Something bites it because they're like, that's weird. I'm going to eat it because bass are Like you said, they're weird. No one knows what they're thinking.
Are you guys like big bait guys? I'm a small product guy just because I live down here on this little river. Like we're fishing for 12, 13 inch Kentuckys mainly on the Muskingum. So all these little baits I have, like that hook you have pulled up there, that's a little one-aught hook for our little mini tube. And there's like hotcakes because no one really makes it. It's like a little niche-y hook. The stores are buying them. Like it's tiny little weird stuff, but that stuff does catch fish.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt's the big bait person right here. Show that again, Matt.
There we go. It's a little bigger now. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So that's just a tiny clash. Let's see.
Here, I'll show you something a little bit bigger, maybe. I don't throw the bigger ones. I'm with you. I throw the smaller stuff.
When are you throwing this stuff? Is this like the pre-spawn glide bait deal?
All the time. I throw year round. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So that's your jam.
Yeah. I'm a big now. If I know I need to catch fish, it's something smaller. The biggest thing I'd throw would be like a Vision 110 jerk bait, but everything else, my jigs are usually finesse jigs with like a chunk, just like that trash chunk right there, which I actually like I saw that at the show. I'm a huge fan of that trash chunk. So it's probably going to finally dethrone the thing I've been using as a jig trailer for a long time. But if I need to catch fish, I throw small, but it's something about a swim bait bite, man. Once you get one, that's like the only real bite you ever want to get again.
Right. Yeah. That's one of them deals, man. I know you got to lock it in your hand and keep it there to build confidence in it, but the bites are very rewarding when you get them on there.
Yes, they are. You're 100% correct.
Yeah.
So, for somebody that has never used custom tackle, they always go to the store and buy their stuff. What would you say to make them change their mind to want to use custom tackle? Like what makes it so unique?
I think just, you know, our brand in general, I firmly believe the quality is just, you know, I don't want to say 10 times better, but like the 1099, for example, it falls in the category of like a bitsy bug, size wise. But it's got a really quality trailer keeper, or wire tied quality hook that's not going to open up. And you'll get guys that are like, oh, I can go buy a, you know, bitsy bug for $219 or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but you're going to use six or eight of those. I mean, 1 3-pound fish, a bitsy bug is like just trash. Like the skirts, roach, and the weed guards looks like a Christmas tree. And and you can catch like, I'm just talking dozens on one of these little 1099s. I took one to Sandusky Bay last fall and literally like the leads almost wore in half. I caught so many. A whole weekend I never took one jig off. And you know, you pay a couple more bucks for a quality product, but the skirt's not moving. You know, your trailers aren't sliding down and ripping off. Like they're locked in with that nice keeper, and it's just a crafted, you know, more of a crafted product. To some people, that doesn't matter and never will, and that's fine. Like, but the people that does matter to, those are the people that we need to focus on taking care of, because they're the ones that are going to support you and help your business grow. Anyways, so, but
I feel like you get better color options as well too with
custom. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yep, and we do tons of just random, basically, like the guys that order frequently, they'll just order, you know, five of a jig in black, but they'll shoot me an email and say, hey, can you tie these up with a couple strands of green pumpkin with a couple strands of red or just whatever their thing is. Everybody's got their little confidence thing. Yep. And I do that constantly, just, you know, little, that's the easiest way for me to take a custom order anymore is just order a color you don't want and shoot me an email directly after. And we tried the whole custom, like build a bait website, and it turned into like more back and forth than with the customers, which when it gets busy, it's just like, it's gotta be efficient if it's going to grow. And like the website is to make it more efficient. But when you have to email back and forth three or four times to figure out that Jerry wants two strands of black and seven strands of yellow and, you know, seven weed guard strand fibers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard. But it's just, we're all very weird, fickle creatures when it comes to our tackle. And I'm one of them too.
Yep. I hear that.
Yep. Oh yeah. But I mean, that 1099, what I like so much about it, and I'm glad Brad pulled that picture up. You're using a super high quality hook through Mustads, which is nice. And all the stuff in the custom stuff is always typically 10 or 20 times better than something you're getting, like a Bitsy Bug. We'll just use that example, which we've all thrown them. Like, just like you said, a big fish hits it, it's going to destroy it. It can catch some fish. It's not necessarily a terrible lure.
Bitsy Bugs catch fish for sure.
I mean, they catch fish, but with going with like something like the 1099, everything about the jig is just higher quality. So I'm one of those guys that I'd rather buy one jig and know the jig's just going to work. When I was throwing Bitsy Bugs, I was getting, you know, two or three every time I went to Walmart or somewhere, just because I knew I'd use them. If I threw a Bitsy Bug one day, I'd be tying a new one on the next time I went out. Is how it is.
Yeah.
Right. So. Right. It's kind of I call it a use it till you lose it jig. It's literally not going to fall apart. It's, you know, nothing's really, it's just like a little tank, until you like snag it so bad you lose it or something. And when I started making these, like, trust me, I was the first one on the list, and I probably tied up 100 different 5-packs of colors of these that are still in my boat like 2 years ago. And I bet I haven't even gone through a dozen of them. And I fish a jig a lot, like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, I'll literally just wear them out. Cause I like to test our products harder than anybody, because I'm not a guy that like, I'm not going to like try to shove a gimmick down anyone's throat, which I don't shove any products in anyone's face, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not the type of guy, like, you can see my products are like simple, straightforward, and solid. Like, that's what I want. Just like a dependable. I think there's a place in the industry for that right now with like so much gimmicky. Everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something solid is needed, and I kind of want to be considered that.
Well, you're off to a good start.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's see here. Do you want to talk a little bit about the soft plastics? I don't think we've hit that.
That's where I was going to say we should go next. We've hit some of the hard stuff. I'd like to talk about the soft plastics, because this is turning into one of my more favorite baits from you guys.
What do you want me to pull up?
Well, I don't know where you're at right now on the website.
He's just the products, it looks like. So go to, if you go to the home page, like it's pretty, just click on the Blue Rock logo. There you go.
Yeah, and just go down to soft plastics.
Go down. Yeah, it's pretty simple. Yeah, click on the one with the swim baits there. There you go. Now you should be able to see most all of them. But the one you're holding there is the Ned Minnow. It's probably on down a little bit just because it's newer. But it's
there it is.
I've got, I've got a good friend. He's a retired police detective. I'm not going to mention his name because he'd probably kill me, but he helps with a lot of our plastics. And I call him the professor. We'll just leave it that way.
Yeah. But
we got these things like pumped full of floating additive, and they stand up like
they do.
Yeah.
The only one that doesn't is the clear minnow. And it's just, or the ghost minnow, but it's because a lot of guys are throwing it on a drop shot or like Demiki rigging it with forward facing. And yeah, it kind of has made them more just lay like float in the column, like parallel or whatever you'd want to say. But, all of the other colors, they stand up at full salute. So,
The thing I like about this one is the, like, it's a mix between the Ned rig and like a diamond tail for a shaky head.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a little neat little spade tail on it. And yeah, I couldn't figure out what to call it forever. I kind of like, I went through a lot of things, and I always like kind of look into sourcing other company names, and a few of the names I was thinking of the top of my head are already like being used. So Ned Minnow was like, well, simple enough for me, and no one's using it. So
yeah,
kind of dual purpose little plastic, I guess.
Oh, for sure. And the reason I like it, I've really like, you'd be surprised. Well, you wouldn't be surprised, but 2 years ago when I really got heavy into kayak fishing, well, more than that now, but, I would try to bring every last item of tackle I owned with me on my kayak. And growing in the industry and just fishing in a kayak, I've really got down to where I want to bring as little as I can. And the joy, the plus with this thing is it stands perfectly straight on a Ned rig without even an issue, but I could throw it on a drop shot. I could throw it as a, like a finesse jig trailer. If I really wanted to, I could probably throw, which I have one rigged up on a rod upstairs that I was going to throw and see how it works, but I could throw like a size one hook on it and run it just like almost like a little Texas rig or a swim bait. It's super versatile, which is what I like. And it does float ridiculous. I mean, I threw this in the tub and it just, it stood. I mean, the tail pulled itself up and it just sat there and just waved, and it was awesome.
It was almost at the beginning when he was testing them out, trying to get the formula right, they'd almost like float a 16th ounce back up to the top. We're like, well, we gotta back it off a little bit.
Yeah.
A little too much. Be a topwater bait.
Hey, that'd be an interesting concept, though.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah, it sure would.
there's a few companies that do. Nico, for instance, they have a soft plastics called the Tadpole. I've got some in this mess of a tackle area I have. And it's a soft plastic that looks like a little tadpole. If you throw it out, it's almost like a NRS inflatable. It will sit on top of the water. It's awesome. And just sits there. And yeah, it's insane. The amount of stuff they're using is ridiculous, but it sits up there.
Yeah, I'm sure that little dude would do some damage in places too.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was kind of my first, entry into your guys' as a whole company. I got it in Dark Horse Box and I saw that and I was like, dude, these are awesome. And then since then I'll get stuff in the Dark Horse boxes, or, you know, I'll pick some stuff up. And the next from the Ned Minnow, man, those trash chunks, I think you have done something that you probably don't think is revolutionary, but it is, because they're smaller, just a little bit smaller than a standard chunk, but they have more meat on them. So you can put the hook on there better, and it's way better. I don't know what else there is to it, but it's just better.
Yeah. Reason I went with that one is because it fits our little triple threat, that little finesse Ned style jig, the one we was talking about that I kind of first custom designed, but that little wire hook that's on that, it catches good in that chunk of meat. And they were just a really good match together. which that little 2-inch chunk or the like that Ned Mini you had it, they all make good little like Ned jig trailers. But yeah, the little chunk is the big chunk hasn't always been a great seller. But that 2-inch one has been very consistent, since we added it. I don't know why, probably just because of what you said. It's just maybe a little different or whatever.
No, those are cool. I like those. This color right here is really cool.
Is that the green pumpkin candy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a popular one. I like the just green pumpkin with the blue flake. You can get crazy on colors. Oh, man. And my buddy that helps, he can come up with some great ones, but I just try to keep it pretty straightforward from an inventory standpoint right now. I feel like as we grow, we can maybe axe some that aren't selling as well and keep adding more, but I don't want to have 20 different color options up there. It's just not efficient at all, right, for where I'm at right now. And it's really the same with my jigs. The 1099's got like a dozen colors just because it's gained popularity. But most of our other jigs only have like 8 to 10 colors, just kind of time-tested greens and browns and blacks. And we do have a white 1099 and a white swim jig just because. Yeah.
I'll tell you something from old Mr. Swindle. You throw a black jig, and if they're not eating the black jig, you throw a brown jig. And if they're not eating the brown jig, you throw the black jig again. Those are the only two jigs. That's how, when I learned jig fishing, it was from a Bass University thing. I had my mom when I was like 17 or 18 got me a 3-month, and he had something on there where Gerald Swindle was talking for 2 hours about jigs, and somebody's like, what colors do you throw? He said, I throw black, I throw brown. When they're not eating the brown jig, I'll throw the black one. When they're not eating the black jig, I'll throw the brown one. That's all you need. You don't need all these fancy-dancy colors, which, I mean, my jig box is full of fancy-dancy colors, so I didn't listen to it.
Yeah, same here.
Right. Now, one of the weirdest things about owning a tackle company and just being a, you know, good old boy down here in Southeast Ohio, which I've gotten around, fish, you know, a few lakes in the south. I try to go to Dale Hollow every spring and been to a few other ones, but you still come across these guys that like are using one of your products, and like it's like maybe one of your products like that you just don't like understand like how they're doing that well on like that color and using it.
Yeah.
But like I had a guy email me last year, and he's like, it was after the Knoxville show, and he's like, hey, I need that 1099, your 7/16, I need 25 all white, just all white. And I was like, what in the world are you doing with that? And he was like, skipping docks somewhere, catching spots on them. And I'm like, well, whatever. So we went ahead and just added a white one to the lineup. I made sure it was cool with him, and I was like, yeah, you can just order it right off the website if because I would never like put him out there where he was catching.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get these customers, and like you'll find out about these little regions where it's like, man, that's a big deal right there. So it just that's kind of how the business evolves too. Not by like stealing people's custom colors, but just learning about different fisheries and the ways they're catching them on these places that, you know, I've always just fished in a little mud bowl river and a jig and a spinner bait and a square bill buzz bait. It's about the end of my vocabulary.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
no, but I was going to say, I've seen white spinner baits. I've never seen an actual white flipping jig.
Right.
That's interesting. Right. That's cool.
I have one, and there's one fishery that I'll throw it in, and that's the only place in the whole country I'll throw it in, and is in a little backwater, brackish water right outside Jacksonville, North Carolina. I don't know why I was throwing everything in the morning. They were smacking a frog. Then I was throwing a black and blue jig the rest of the day. And I'd watch fish look at it and just swim off. And it was pissing me off. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to throw this white one just so I can say I threw it. And I threw it. Holy crap. It just turned on. And they were just eating it. Like, and they were eating in grass, flipping docks, putting in a structure, just throwing it and just casting it, smashing it. And I was like, all right. And then I threw it again the next day somewhere else. Guess what? Nothing happened. Went back there 2 weeks later, eating it again. So I got four in my box. I've had them there for 9 years. And they don't get used except for when I go back to North Carolina.
I don't know what it is like in that, the color spectrum and stuff with fish, but you can make a lot of beautiful colors and stuff, but there's always been something really special about pure black and pure white. It seems like those two colors have always been consistent fish catchers. Everything in between catches them too, but I don't know what it is about black and white, but it's definitely something there.
Mix them together and create a Beetlejuice jig.
Right. I've done that, and it's just so ugly. I couldn't even throw it if I had it.
See, now that you said that, Brad, I'm starting to think I really want to try a Beetlejuice jig. That'd be sick. I want to try one.
I've actually made that for custom orders before, and I was like, who in the hell, reminds me of something. But, hey, confidence is key. Confidence is key. So if that's their
thing. I tell you what, I'm going to do that. I'm going to place an order for a black one, and I just want you tied as black and white. And I just want one just to see, because if it gets bit, I'm going to be the most annoying. Right. As the guy, as the kite cushion booth guy would say, because I bought the douchiest hat on earth, I'm going to be the douchiest guy ever with a Beetlejuice jig, and I will not shut up about it if it starts catching fish.
Make sure you call me out when you do it.
For sure.
Speaking of mixing colors and stuff, I think the coolest color that I've ever mixed on a skirt was black and chartreuse. And that was on a buzz bait. That was awesome.
That's not a bad combo. That makes a pretty bait for sure.
Yeah.
And you don't see a whole lot of them. Like, I never understood that. So the big reason I love the Ned minnow is because of that chartreuse tail. I love plastics that have a dot of chartreuse or a section of chartreuse, because to me, confidence wise, it says the fish is going to see that and key in on that when they hit. So they're going to hit it from the back or hit it from the front. That's why on my crankbaits, I love when there's a big red throat on a crankbait, because I feel like they're going to key in on that. So I don't know why you don't see more black and chartreuse stuff, because I've thrown those and they do work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. For sure. Chartreuse has a little something special about it too. I don't know. I'm really straightforward with my blacks and greens, and I don't get too cute. And sometimes a guy has to poke at me quite a bit to maybe add a new color to the line. Cause it goes back to me, not wanting to sell gimmicky stuff. For example, the fire crawls and inferno crawls, when that was first starting to become popular, I was like, man, that just looks like something you would just convince a 10-year-old to buy.
Yeah.
But they do catch fish. I've been convinced, and I'm glad we've added a color like that, but I'm just kind of old school when it comes to some things. But I've learned that being open-minded is a good way to keep growing and listening to all the feedback and all of that. And criticism, you got to take that stuff and, use it to your advantage as well, because we've definitely had products that maybe had a little flaw at the beginning and kind of had to learn, listen to our customers and not get butthurt about it. Just fix it and say, here, how's this? Until they don't have anything they can say except for damn, you got it, That's kind of the way I've always approached that stuff. I've never been offended if someone was oh, your Ned hooks are pieces of shit. I bent one open, on a smallmouth, and I'm like, what were you using? And he's like, oh, 7.3 medium heavy bait caster with 15-pound test. I'm like,
yeah,
freaking Ned hook. what do you want
Yeah, well, those are the people who are like, I wish, like when Z-Man, for example, because they, when it comes to Ned Hooks, they kind of really got the industry going, right?
Right.
And they have their, all their Ned Hooks are super, super, super light wire.
Yeah.
To where if you, even if you have a medium, like I fish my Neds on a medium light with 8 pound fluorocarbon to 10 pound braid, and I can bend them out. And I'm like, man, I wish there was something thicker. And then I would get a thicker one and I get stuck all the time, be like, oh man, I wish it was lighter wire. Right. Like, it's just, people are just going to complain to complain. It's just how it is.
There's a few things that are like that with, it's like, you've got to just find the best possible blend of like, and using your head, like what's sensible, because you're never going to make every individual happy. Like when it comes to too light of a spinnerbait wire or too thick of a weed guard or too heavy of a Ned hook. And like, that's like an example. Like I use a little heavier of a Ned hook just because it saves me some of that. Like, you know, cause guys will run on the Z-Man hooks till the sun don't shine about them being junk. And I don't I don't want to give someone the opportunity to say that about mine. So, he's a little bigger hook. Like it's just got a little more beef to it. Some guys like that. Some guys want a little, you know, number one or whatever. And spinnerbait wire, that's something else I could go on and kind of gripe about, but we use a little lighter wire, you know, to get a little more vibration and probably a few more bites, but you'll get someone that, you know, they'll say, well, you know, your spinnerbait broke in half. Oh man. I'm like, well, you know, where were you fishing? Well, I was at St. Clair and I caught about 10 4 pound smallies and then it broke right in two. And I'm like,
well, that's worth its money right there.
Right. Yeah. It paid for it. And I had a professional tell me that at a show. He's like, he fell in love with our spinnerbaits and bought a bunch of them. And he's like, listen, if this spinnerbait in a tournament catches me 1 4 or 5 pound fish, that becomes a practice spinnerbait at that point. Like it's done its job.
Yeah.
And not everybody has that kind of money. And I understand that because I don't have that kind of money. But if you catch like 8 or 10, like St. Clair smallies on a nice, like light wire compact spinnerbait, like that thing's definitely done its job.
Yep. It
really has.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same concept when people, like I've had people who, like I'm a big mega bass girl when it comes to hard, hard baits. So crank baits, shirk baits, everything. And I'll go out in the winter and I'll catch 10 or 15 fish on a Vision 110. And then I'll switch the hooks out. And then I'll have guys be like, oh yeah, I've been using this Vision 110 for 2 years and it just doesn't stay pinned anymore. I was like, well, how many fish have you caught on it? Like, I don't know, like 30. Okay, well, you need to change your hooks out. They dull up. They dull over time. There's like, you're not getting a quality product and not have any type of maintenance on it. And this is how it goes. If you really want that top quality, you have to stay on it and stay on top of it. So,
yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not complaining because like these circumstances I'm talking about are like one and a lot, like hundreds, like someone that just may not like quite get it with the lighter wire or just don't understand, but those are what stick in my head more than like the hundreds of pictures that get sent to me of like people holding up, you know, big bass and like the things I should like take more in and like enjoy. But the things that stick with me, even if maybe we're not in the wrong, are like the negatives that have, but those negatives are also what's helped us adapt and keep growing just by not you know, not just like being arrogant and ignoring it, just, you know, looking into it and adjusting and keep evolving, I guess, into making good quality products.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, guys, I think we're winding down here. We've covered a lot of stuff here. So, Jesse, you want to shout out your guys' website and where people can follow you on Facebook, Instagram, and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty straightforward, just bluerocktackle.com. We've got Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. TikTok's a little embarrassing sometimes, but, you know, we're trying to do our thing over there. It's actually grown better than anything, but it is what it is. I'm all about adapting and trying new things. So, but yeah, and we're always here. If you ever need to holler, send an email or whatever, we're here to catch you more fish. That's our slogan.
Heck yeah.
I'm about it.
Well, guys, go check out the spinnerbaits. That's the first product I've used by Blue Tackle. I like them. They've caught me a bunch of fish this year, so go check those out. Go check out the jigs and the Neds and all that stuff. So,
Yeah. They've got a flavor for whatever you want. I can tell you, I'm going to get me some 1099s because they look dope. And I'm going to throw the living crap out of them down at Dale Hollow and see what happens.
You won't get wrong there. Green pumpkin black. That's a good one down there. I found it at least.
Brad already knows what I'm doing.
I'm still not ruling out getting down there for you guys' this little tournament.
Oh, you should. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be. That would be dope.
Could set up your booth and everything.
Yep.
Right. Well, I might just be setting up my boat to go fish if I go down there.
Yeah, dude. That'd be awesome.
I love to fish. Don't get me wrong. You get me down there, I might not be worried about selling baits.
I don't know. I tell you what, man, Dale Hollow has that way of when you go down there, like me and Brad are probably supposed to help out a little bit more for the tournament, and we just go down there and then we just don't show up for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Until the very end.
All day, man.
Dude, it is like they'll be coming in from the tournament at like 3, and somebody like when we have cell phone signal, somebody will text me or Brad and be like, "Hey, you guys coming in?" Be like, "Ah, oh, yeah, man, we're like 6 miles away from the water." So,
and that's on a kayak too, so that takes a long time to get back.
Yeah. That could be a sketch job with a kayak down there, because that cell phone services, it's iffy at best.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. And like our friend Cam found out, it's really easy to tip over and lose all your crap.
I still
got that pin, and I'm going back this year to get. He lost 2 mega bash rods, a cell phone, and a like 4 Plano boxes, and a little creek arm near a certain marina, and I've got the pin, and I'm gonna go. It's only like 4 foot deep. I can't believe he didn't get out and get those out. But
you better get on that. You know, like that point. That I got all respect for the kayakers, but that ain't something you're gonna find my big doing. The prop guys, seriously, it's a whole other ball game when you take that. I got big respect for the belly boat and stuff's big down here in the rec lands. Kayaking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other realm of just equipment and work and all that stuff. So I get it. And I greatly appreciate you guys having me on tonight.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was a good show.
Oh, for sure. Loved it. Loved having you on, man. But I've got nothing else, Brad. You good?
No, yeah, we're good, man.
Awesome.
All right. Well, everyone out there, Jesse, thanks for coming on yet again. And for everyone still listening, thanks for hanging out with us for the whole episode. And we'll catch you on the flip side.
Catch you on the flippity flip.
See you guys.